Okay, so Dr. Berman, when you hear the word energy, what is energy? What comes to your mind when you hear this word?
When I hear the word energy, I recognize that my education around energy, my awareness of energy, has been going on for a very long time. Many years ago, I remember seeing pictures of what an atom looked like, and I grew up in an era of science fairs in grade school, and I remember using different sized styrofoam balls and toothpicks making images of atoms. And what has been amazing and beautiful for me is the awareness due to, I guess, our technology in the West, where smaller and smaller things are being photographed, or if they're still invisible, at least there's measurement so that change is indicated in some way. And over that whole process, it has made sense to me that basically what I learned in my probably third grade science class was energy is neither created nor destroyed. Energy moves. Yeah. And that's a pretty big thing to try and think about. Well, what is it that's neither created nor destroyed? Yeah. It takes me to that beginning point of, well, what was there before the sun, before the earth, as well as what will there be after if there is no more sun or earth? And those are the really, really big questions that can be frightening. And energy has, for me, been a way into being able to feel safe thinking and talking about things. And so as I think of energy kind of is the basic building block, and it's so basic and in some ways so small that it's certainly not visible to my human eye, that I can talk about almost everything I experience in terms of energy. So perhaps my body is physical energy that I can feel, it's solid, made up of smaller and smaller and smaller parts of energies, because we have been told what atoms do or don't look like and the different smaller parts of our body. But my thoughts are energy too. And maybe there I can put the label mental energy on my thoughts. And it's a different kind of relationship to my thoughts than when I can understand that I'm aware of my thoughts, and if I can let that awareness be an awareness of energy, I have a different way of dealing with my thoughts. My feelings in terms of the emotional feelings, that's emotional energy. And so I can now have a way of thinking and being aware of my emotions that doesn't drown me. I don't identify with the emotion. I can say, wow, I am aware of this sadness or this rage or this love or this gratitude. And it gives me being able to speak in the language of energy about the things that are really important, really scary, really big. It's very helpful to me. Mm-hmm. It's been helpful to me in my work. It's been helpful to me in my personal life. It's been so helpful to me having conversations with my children, with the people who are closest to me, my family members.
So energy is, in your mind, from your understanding, a basic building block. it's like a fundamental unit of some sort. Could you elaborate on that a little bit, what you meant by that?
So more than a fundamental unit, the fundamental unit, perhaps. At least in this universe. I don't know anything beyond that.
Right.
But in my experience, as I've looked at and tried to understand energy through my own experience, I experienced that energy is on a continuum. And at one end of that continuum, there's very contracted, you know, the frequency of the vibration of that energy is tight, small, contracted. And then at the other end of the continuum, it's very, very expansive. And let's just say in terms of an emotion, maybe the contraction is fear. So energy is a contracting, the energy of fear is a contracting energy, emotional energy. And joy or celebration is perhaps on the other end of the continuum of that expansive, free-flowing energy. And that all of the feelings that I have lie somewhere along that continuum of energy. And that's so helpful because I can then identify with the awareness of that energy instead of having to be rage or be resentment. Mm-hmm. I can look at it, acknowledge it for what it is, not necessarily feel guilty or bad about it, but I also then can decide what I'm going to do with that feeling.
Yes.
So it's empowering for me. Same thing with thoughts. You know, thoughts and emotions are so closely connected. And we can talk later if we want about what that connection's about and how the brain mediates all of that, both in our body as well as with our mind.
Yes.
But there's a sense of empowerment to understand myself as an emotional being, the emotions being a kind of energy, just like my thoughts. I'm a mental being with thoughts, and the thoughts are mental energy. Sometimes I have, you know, when I say feelings, mostly, usually, I use it to mean emotions, but it also can be physical sensations. So at that at one end of the continuum, that more contracted, I can talk about physical pain. Even as I say that, I can feel my muscles contract, right, kind of protect against the pain of having just been cut. Right, by slicing my finger instead of the carrot I was trying to cut in the kitchen, versus that ease, those beautiful rare moments when you can just feel your body being in the right place, doing the right thing, and you can just feel that openness and in every aspect of your body.
So are you saying that energy is something that is existing within us, or it is us?
I'm saying that energy is a way for us to understand us. I understand myself as a multifaceted energetic being, and one facet is my physicality, one facet is my emotionality, one facet is my mental activity, and that helps me to be able to begin to see myself as having a lot of tools and not feeling overwhelmed by any one of those facets of myself.
Mm-hmm. So, would you be referring to a state of balance?
Yeah, I feel the word balance and or alignment is a word I've come to use since I've been working with energy. The the awareness of energy and kind of using that as a basic starting point for who am I.
Sure. So when we think about physical health and mental health, and of course there's other forms of health also, like economic health or relationship health, what does the word health mean to you in relation to energy?
So the word health is, for me, a word for a domain of a state of being within this energetic system that, for the most part, I think about it being my body. But if I talk about mental health, I think about it then in terms of my brain and my mind more. But brain is also part of the body. But in this energetic system that is me, that is a human being, that all when all those parts are working together as a whole, it's like we are a biome. I'm not just a body. All the bits and parts of this body, no matter how big or how small they are related to and dependent upon all the other parts, bits and pieces of the body. And when there's a working together, an alignment with each one of the cells, with each one of the organs, with each one of the systems within my body, doing what it is capable of doing in its full expression of itself, then everything else is benefited. And I use the word alignment for that. But balance is another word. It's a beautiful word.
Sure, absolutely. Would you say that most of humanity is not in alignment?
I would say that at this point in the evolution of humanity as a species and our planet as a planet within a larger system of other planets, that there's so much imbalance that it really takes consciousness and work to find the balance and to work towards maintaining that balance, supporting that balance. And more I'm coming to an understanding that our consciousness itself is an important tool in having goals and intentions, and that our bodies need the support of our intention to not just be healthy, but to be thriving, to be existing in that space of whatever this physical body is capable of being in its full potential.
That is very, very beautiful. You know, when you mentioned about alignment, this is a very powerful word. And when a person begins to look at where they are in their alignment, how would they go about doing something like that? Or what is it that you are, you know, proposing to do in these groups through Angel Wing, etc., to examine this issue of alignment, or to even and or to assist individuals to come to that state? It's just in a general sense.
So for my understanding of alignment, and that's based very much so on my experience of being, when I use the term in alignment, things work well, even if, let's just say, the cut on my finger that I mentioned earlier has not fully healed. There's a way in which even that sort of imperfection of the body is in alignment in the healing process, because our bodies are designed to heal themselves with the right support and the right help. So that, and when I'm out of alignment, or I see others and I think they need some help, or they would like to be in better alignment. It's because parts of ourselves are, as it were, going in one direction while other parts of ourselves are striving for another direction. So an example of that would be, let's just say on my way to this class or to this meeting, I had a near accident experience and it really shook me up. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways I responded to it was to be very angry at somebody I thought was being inconsiderate and an unsafe driver. And so I come in here with the intention of doing a productive session, doing something with a goal of achieving something in this meeting. And yet there's a part of me that's so angry that's still back screaming and yelling internally at that guy who almost created a very bad accident.
Sure.
Whether he was even aware of it or not doesn't matter. But these, the other cars, one of which I was a part of, are very aware of how dangerous that was. I'm out of alignment because part of me is back 30 minutes ago in the fear, trauma, anger, judgment of that accident. And I'm trying to be here having a conversation with you about creating something.
Definitely. You know, it's very powerful what you just said. Fear, trauma, anger, and judgment about that particular incident, which lingers on, carries on. I think that is an experience that almost anybody would be able to acknowledge that that happens. As a psychologist, as a person in the helping professions for a long time, what has been your greatest challenge with individuals with regards to this non-alignment problem? What is it? Where's the biggest challenge in this for you?
So, for me, working with clients, the most practical and powerful way for me to talk about that is to go back to my relationship with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because every client I have ever seen has brought something to me that I could relate to in some way. I have not had all the experiences that my clients have had, but as humans, we're so much more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that aliveness, in that humanness that we all share, I think one of the biggest, let me just say the starting point of moving out of survival into thriving is to acknowledge that the areas that I can control are all within me.
Mm-hmm.
That I can't single-handedly change global warming. I can't force my neighbor to put their garbage in the right place. I can't make the guy who almost ran me off the road into another car drive differently. But I do have the power to control what I do with the experiences that I have. And so understanding that really a healthy understanding of what can I control is limited to me. Mm-hmm. I can control me, and that the habits and the patterns that our culture supports in us, and certainly Madison Avenue fuels in us, is the blaming other energy. And that makes us victims over and over again. And although it may momentarily feel very good to blame the judgment, what we come to understand is whatever we're thinking about someone else on the subconscious level, we're giving 10 times that to ourselves.
No, that's very, very powerful. You know, most people are reactive in life. And when you talk about alignment, and particularly with regards to the group work that is planned ahead for Angel Wing, what what resonates inside of you with respect to the alignment you're talking about? Are you in alignment? Do you feel that you are in alignment, or do you feel you have made progress? And I'm not asking you to, you know, be egotistical or anything like that, but I'm asking just for clarity about what you're talking about from your own experience.
My experience is, over time, with work, with the intention of understanding who am I?
Yes.
Why am I here in this human body? What am I going to do with the life that I've been given right now? And how do I maximize my experience of life? I have learned that if I just check in, if I take a moment to take a deep breath and kind of check in, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's going on in all the parts of my body? And it just takes a moment to do that.
Right.
I can tell if I'm in alignment or not. I can feel it because I'm tight. I can feel it because I'm totally focused on what's outside of me, not what I'm thinking or feeling inside of myself.
So is there a difference between alignment and balance, or are they the same? Or do you see any difference between these two words?
I think I probably use them interchangeably, but I think that that's a great question. Because as you ask it to me, what I think about, what comes to me is balance is a better word for all the systems in my body.
Yes.
My mental, my emotional, is my pancreas working with my lower intestines and my heart and my lungs. That balance is the parts of the system working together. Alignment is, I think for me, and I almost get a visual image of it, is that there's this strong center column, perhaps running through my body, and around that is my physical form, and then around that is more like my emotional energy, and around that is my mental energy, and so when those are all in the same, going in the same direction, supporting each other.
Yes.
They're kind of like, you know, up and down, north and south pole.
Yeah.
You know, the earth has an axis and it's kind of around two poles.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps we as human beings have an axis too. And that's what I think about as alignment.
So in the work ahead with regards to Angel Wing and the various groups that you'll be running and audios and videos and so many materials, it seems to me that this word alignment, or the concept of alignment, the reality of alignment, is a central focal thematic point around which perhaps the entire program you're planning on presenting could develop. Would you say that's accurate, or would you want to?
Yes, I think that's very insightful.
Yes.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think that's very insightful.
So, could you elaborate a little bit further on the recognition of non-alignment, and how you plan to perhaps approach this question in the groups of, you know, anywhere from 4 to 7 or 8 people? How is a person to recognize? I'm sitting here with you right now. You know, we'll be done, let's say, in a half an hour, whatever. I'll go home. I'll be driving from this place, beautiful home that you have, to my place. There'll be a 20-minute drive. How can I recognize if I'm out of alignment in that drive? That's just a very, simple question.
So I can go back to the techniques that have been helpful for me.
Yes.
And that is to check in. So check in with what? It's pretty easy to start with checking in with my body.
Okay.
You know, where just mentally very quickly, am I holding anything? Am I grabbing the steering wheel as I'm driving?
Tightly, because a lot of muscle tension is there.
Yeah, is my jaw set? Right. Many people, including me, carry tension in the jaw.
Right.
Right? If I'm sitting, not occupied with a task like driving, are my fingers fidgeting? Or is some part of my body tense and tight?
So that's like a first step. So in the group that you'll be running, you'll be going over these techniques with them at that point.
Yeah, and another one And maybe an even better one if you're driving, sure, because you need to be focused on safety,
yeah,
is, am I aware of my breath?
Mm-hmm.
And I can stay very focused on the road and what I need to be doing and allow myself to be aware of the sensation of breath coming into my body and flowing out of my body. And that simple technique of simply putting my awareness on my breath affects the brain in such a way that it turns on the parasympathetic nervous system and begins to flood the body with all these relaxation, you're safe, it's okay hormones.
So the awareness of the flow of breath is a direct indicator of the level of non-alignment. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that the total absence of awareness of breath,
yeah,
is okay, typically associated with some sort of distraction.
Uh-huh. Which then, of course, impacts the physiology of the body.
Yes, exactly.
And, of course, mental states.
Exactly, because the body, the mind, are, and the brain are intimately related. And there are many people out there, you know, if you're more interested in this, you can look at somebody like Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's written some very fairly user-friendly books for the Western mind, mm-hmm, validating all the kind of cutting-edge research, which talks about the same thing we're talking about, alignment, how are the body, the brain, the mind all connected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interest in that and a lot of science around that going on.
It really seems to me that most people who are having physical health, mental health issues, or they're having distress in any area of life, even if it's not a clinical diagnosis, there is an ongoing state of falling out of alignment. It's the falling out of that, and that's become the new normal. It's a pathological homeostasis, in a more technical way of putting it. Could you elaborate a little bit more on why that happens? I mean, why is it that this type of falling out of this balance has become so commonplace? I don't know what your thoughts are about something
well,
like this.
Well, the word disease...
Yeah.
Our very Western word, right? If we break it down, there's dis, or lack of, ease.
Exactly.
And so it's a very good word, and in some ways a very descriptive word.
Yes.
I think that our education in this particular culture hasn't helped us to understand the power of that word itself. Mm-hmm. And... And that there's not very much around us in terms of external stimulation, what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we smell, that is encouraging us to check in.
Mm-hmm.
How at ease are my thoughts?
So
how
at
ease is my body?
So this checking in is a type of a meditative activity? Or do you want to not use the word meditation in that? How would you distinguish?
I would call checking in, using your breath as an anchor, right?
Okay.
So there's this anchor place that you never have to worry about not having it, because as long as you're in your body, you're going to have breath.
Right.
Right?
We hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. How aware we are of our breath is a whole other issue.
It certainly is.
And I think that I don't want to overemphasize, oh, you have to be counting every breath you take.
Right.
I just want to be pointing out that the breath is this, well, it's a mechanism for life to be sustained, mm-hmm, in our body. But we can actually use our brain, our mind, to set an intention to every once in a while check in with our breath. And if we begin to do that more regularly, we will begin to experience the difference between our body, what our body and our thoughts feel like when we're not paying attention to our breath, and what our body, our thoughts, our emotions feel like when we are paying attention, mm-hmm, to our breath. So it's this, the breath, right? They call it the breath of life.
Yeah.
And it gives us, it not only gives the physicality the energy it needs to sustain life through the oxygen, our lungs, our heart, all of those systems in the body, but it gives us something to anchor ourselves in a line. It puts us back into our body. Because most of us are living outside of our body in terms of what we're aware of. We're thinking about what we're experiencing. We're not really allowing our tongue to, the taste buds in our tongue to communicate to our whole awareness what's in my mouth. And so to get back, so that's what the inside part of it, but the why, how did we end up here? So much in our culture is about consuming. We consume through our eyes, our ears, our nose, our mouth, our touch,
right?
And somebody wants to make money off that. And so we're always being told what we need to be, how we need to be consuming to be good, okay. Any tagline that they can put on advertisement to hook us into going outside thinking that's going to make me better.
Well, it's a very powerful point. Certainly, you know, there is the experience of stimulation. There is so much diverse type of experience in anything these days. It doesn't matter what it is, right? From all the internet material to other forms of stimuli that are certainly coming in. The experience of activating pleasure or desire or the euphoria, the wow experience like in addictions. Again, there's so many such personal experiences that anybody may have. Would you say that there is a level of personal experience that throws one out of alignment versus the kind of being in present in the now experience with the senses that brings one into alignment? So it is not the denial of sense experience, like total asceticism. It is also not hyperindulgence. This, I hear something like that. So would you elaborate on that, please?
Yes. So it's not the denial of experience. As long as we're in a human body, we are going to be with our senses, right? And yet to be able to be aware of how the body is in fact responding to the sensory stimulation is very, very powerful. I personally love ice cream, and I really love chocolate ice cream.
Okay.
So I can go buy an ice cream cone, and I have tried this as an experiment to have a very small, you know, the baby cone, and to eat it very slowly and focus on the eating of the chocolate ice cream as opposed to everything else that's going on around me. And that's a very different experience than whatever is going on for me when I go in and I buy the jumbo cone and then I just jam it into my mouth and eat it very fast and at the end of it, think I need to go buy another one.
Sure.
Because I've missed the actual experience of the taste of the cone. I've missed the experience of eating the chocolate ice cream.
Exactly.
And so there's something about being in touch enough with my bodily experience of the stimuli, right? The sensation that allows me to know that's enough. Right? Because what I'm craving is a sense of balance, not a gallon of chocolate ice cream.
Right. And that distinction is really interesting because it almost sounds to me, as I listen to you, that you're saying that each human being is really wanting that alignment, is wanting to be in alignment, but the approach that is taken by hyperstimulation or by running after the sense objects, or however it may be put, the approach that is taken is creating just the opposite effect.
Yes.
You know, it's looking for the right state using wrong methods.
Yes, and the experience of looking at a very young child, perhaps even a newborn. They're not awake very much because they're still needing to be in the sleep state to continue developing outside of the womb. But there's a state of very young children that you can see they're in alignment. They're in balance, right? Yes, they cry when they're hungry or they have gas or, you know, they poop and pee and their diapers need to be changed. But for the most part, they're not communicating to me anyway that they need very much from the external world. So I think each and every one of us, born in human bodies, come into the world knowing alignment. And the culture, the world, the development of the senses, trying to figure out what's me, what's not me, all of that, pulls us out of alignment. Because if we don't have very early education to develop the neural networks, there's something very precious going on in our body, and that paying attention to our body is a good idea, we're going to get drawn outside. Because sensory stimulation from the outside is powerful.
Yes, definitely. And that is sought after. So the seeking after excessive amounts of food, different kinds of different foods, that which create that experience of pleasure, is sought after. And then that throws the body out of alignment. It throws it out of alignment by overweight, obesity. Physical health problems occur because of hyperstimulation to large extent, perhaps.
Yes. And when we think about, and we live in a hyperstimulated world.
Yeah, all the time.
Everything is going faster, more intense, more.
Right.
And I think many of us are learning, like, I need less. But perhaps the way to understand the when and where we need less lies in a commitment to check back into our bodies, right? With this breath, you know, what's my body feeling like? What are my emotions? And it's not like good emotions are good and bad. They're a continuum of contracted to expansive, and we're not bad for feeling rage or anger or judgment. We can learn that emotion is trying to tell us to pay attention to something. Something could go wrong here. Pay attention.
Right.
Pay attention.
It's like a barometer. It's an indicator. It's a direct indicator.
Yes. It's like the red line on the thermostat. I don't get mad at my thermostat when the red thing goes up really high on a hot summer day. Yeah. I just know to turn on the air conditioning or turn on the heat if it's too cold.
Very much so. You know, you've used this expression, contracted versus expanded, or on a continuum, contraction to expansion. And you've also talked about energy very nicely, that energy takes this contracted form. And that same energy can take an expanded form through doing the breath work, becoming more aware of one's breathing and aware of the response of the body, etc. The awareness of contraction is needed, it seems to me. Could you elaborate on that? What is the awareness of contraction? What is contraction? If you could say a little more about that and kind of go into it.
So let's talk about contraction in terms of the physical body.
Okay.
When a loud noise surprises me, I jump and my muscles automatically contract. So so that's a bodily response.
Exactly.
In a contracted state.
Exactly.
So the surprise. I think even surprise does it, but certainly if I'm in a dark, strange place and that happens, then there's a lot of fear with the surprise too. And so that's a physical contracted response. I think that, say, in traffic, if I get cut off or I see somebody doing something that's very dangerous to pedestrians or something, I can have mental contraction and thinking that drivers so unconscious, what's wrong with them? They shouldn't even have a driver's license. Is there a hotline I can call and report their license number? All of that is this judgment, you know, bad, bad, bad kind of thoughts. Mm-hmm. That's a contracted thought.
And
right?
It's very experiential.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in the group that you're going to be running, could you talk about how you plan to make this experiential, or how you would go about discussing the experiential aspect of the contraction?
Yeah, I think that one very beautiful and productive way of beginning to play with or explore energy running from contracted to expansive.
Yes.
Is to start with the physical body, because the senses are embedded in our physical body. And you can do a body scan. And it can be guided in terms of somebody talking with you about starting with your toes, what's going on there. And if you want to do a body scan and relaxation, then you can consciously direct the person to relax their toes and then gracefully move up the entire body so that the person has a real experience of mm-hmm. contraction and relaxation, yes. which I would equate with expansion mm-hmm. in the physical body. Once you have that kind of experience and you can relate it to the energy in your body, then you can start thinking about different thoughts.
Hold on one second. Here we said to relate that experience to the energy in the body.
Yes.
So there's your connection that you've been talking about, right?
Yes.
So let's see if I'm requesting you to further elaborate on that piece that you just mentioned.
Okay, so in terms of contracted energy,
yes.
Perhaps maybe in the very beginning, a good exercise would be to have people purposefully contract all the muscles in their body, the way some yoga teachers do at the very beginning, right?
Exactly.
Or at the very end of class. Contract everything you possibly can to hold your breath, and then release.
Release it all.
And then direct the people in the room to just take a moment now. And as you breathe, just be aware of what your hands, your feet, your whatever feel like. So there's that immediate kind of, this is contracted because I've purposefully contracted my body. And this is expansion because I purposely released that expansion. And the body wants to be relaxed because that's how it functions best.
Also, would you say that someone who is, let's say, like a person who's doing a lot of aerobic exercise, who's involved physically, and is really enjoying that exercise, whether it's weights or strength training, whatever the form may be, and they've gotten to a certain stage where they're able to do it so consistently now that it's releasing a lot of natural energy that's kind of inbuilt within the body, this burning fat, etc. Would you say that that's an expansion while there is activity going on?
Yes, yes. Activity can be an expansive activity.
Yes.
Because we're multidimensional in the sense that I'm not just my physicality. I'm my physicality plus my thoughts plus my feelings plus my action.
Yes.
So all of that and all of those things can come into an alignment in a way. And I think the operative word here is conscious. A conscious direction of the energy of this activity that is very good and very healthy for not only my body, my brain.
So in many ways, the activity we perform, whether it's mental and or physical, usually it's both, of course, that interconnection of the two changes the flow of energy or opens it up or contracts it, however. And if a person becomes aware of energy directly, then that energy can be used mindfully for activity.
Yes.
So could you say something about that?
So this, for me, touches on the why would I care what energy is?
Right, exactly.
Why would I even want to be able to relate to my the different aspects of my life in terms of energy. Because the awareness of that energy and in all of its varied forms in my life gives me power.
Very much so, because there is the misuse of energy, there's the abuse of energy, there's the wastage of energy, right? Isn't it so?
Yes. So yes. Yes. So, I mean...
It's a matter of recognition that...
Like the eating of the chocolate ice cream that I referred to earlier. Yeah. The amount of energy I expended buying the ice cream, stuffing it in my mouth unconsciously.
Right.
Which is very important, unconsciously. The amount of energy it's going to take for my body to digest it, to eliminate all the fat and the sugar and the whatever else in the ice cream my body does not need.
Exactly.
And extract the nutrients that it does need. That's an enormous expenditure of energy.
Very
for
much
what
so.
Result?
Very much so. So it's seeking that instant experience of perhaps heightened pleasure of eating the ice cream. And so it's more of a psychological experience that, wow, this feels good. This is, you know, it's a dopamine release, etc.
Yes.
That is there, but that release comes at a huge cost.
In this instance
that you're talking about.
So, and it relates to the instance that the example you gave me in terms of exercise, because I never got it, but runners tell me, people who love running tell me that there's a point where you hit the runner's high.
Exactly.
My knees always gave out before I ever got the runner's high.
Right,
but that, you know, we all have our own ways of doing things.
Sure.
There's, The consciousness of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, so that I can remain aware of all of the parts of me.
Beautiful.
Right? What I'm thinking about, what I'm feeling, what my physicality is doing. I personally have done yoga for many, many years, and I know what it's like to go through a yoga class that's taught by a wonderful instructor and do nothing but push my body because I want to look as flexible as the most flexible person in the class.
Right.
Versus coming into a class and feeling the gratitude of the instructor's, you know, teaching of the class and honoring my body and where it's at on that day and using the instructions to just move my body into whatever expression serves my body on that day,
right,
versus serving some idea of what I want my body to be doing.
That's a very interesting distinction. And I think that that's the difference between an idealized goal versus being completely present with where you are and kind of going into that present state. Could you elaborate a little bit more on this distinction?
Yes.
It's very, very powerful.
Well, I think it comes back to one of the core issues here, which is we have the body we have.
Yeah.
Right? And my body doesn't look like a lot of other people's bodies. It's unique. And at this stage in my life, it's a function of what I was given on a biological level and what I've done with my body all these years, right?
Yeah.
But to be able to love my body, it's a very interesting concept in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us truly acknowledge what an incredible gift our bodies are?
Exactly.
It allows us to be in the world.
Yes, it's the means through which the world is experienced.
Exactly. And yet, there's not much in the culture that I see that says, honor your body. Right here, right now, exactly the way it is, because that's the body I've got right here, right now.
Most people are abusing the body by overstimulation and by negative emotion and whatnot.
Yes, and why are my hips the size they are and not the size my neighbors are? Why?
And then the idealized versions that are there in the media and in the different magazines and not to mention things like pornography and all the rest of all that thing with teenagers and anorexia and all those problems.
Yes, so to come back then to perhaps an essential part of alignment is the energy of gratitude.
The energy of gratitude. So when you say that, to recognize the glory that is there already, even though there may be imbalance, to have that gratitude, and then, so could you elaborate on how gratitude expands energy, that expansive state? And I know we'll wrap up in just a moment here, but I just wanted to get some global view from you, you know, on some of these things.
Well,
because that's a very powerful word. It's the energy of gratitude.
Yes. Well, if everything is energy, right, at the very basis.
Exactly. It's all one energy,
My experience of true gratitude, not, oh, thank you so much, I want you to know, I want you to think a certain way about me, right? Yeah. No, just that awareness that, oh, my God, we're talking about the body, so I'm going to use it with the body. These legs, no matter what condition my knees are in, are allowing me to get from one place to another. This belly, this gut, right, is allowing me to take nutrients out of things that I put in my mouth.
Right, exactly.
And sustain the life force in my body. These lungs, this breath that I'm breathing in, is keeping this body, which is my vehicle to experience the world, alive. That to come back to that very, very basic awareness. Who am I, right? I'm not somebody who's going to look great in my bathing suit next summer if I, you know, diet or do whatever, right? Right here, right now, I'm alive. I can have an experience of that, and part of that is my body.
Which kind of comes to my mind as I'm listening to you, what just flashed into my mind was a state of expansion into health.
Yes.
You know, we think of health as a goal that is a static goal. And I think maybe what you're saying is that really it's a dynamic flow of energy where health keeps expanding further from the physical to the emotional to the mental to the spiritual.
And then the awareness of how they're influencing each other.
Yes.
How the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. But to be able to be aware of the parts and hold those parts not so much in judgment, but as pieces of information.
Very much so. So, okay, so this is wonderful. I want to just ask you one final question for today's dialogue here and recording. And once again, thank you very much for your time. My final question is regarding stagnation. You mentioned about expansion, mentioned about contraction, stagnation. People are feeling stuck in cyclical patterns, same old patterns. They feel stuck. This is the language that is used. You know, the same thing happening over and over again. People go through yo-yo diets, let's say, or people go through relationship problems, and they wind up in the same place where they were before. They're kind of stuck in cyclical patterns. If you could conclude with some insights on that.
Well, my insights on that are gratitude for, one, the advances in technology that have allowed us to image what's going on in the brain in real time.
Yes.
And as a result of that, the notion of neuroplasticity
very important.
Has been introduced into the common culture. Right. And for the layman, it means we can reprogram our own brains up until our last breath. So there's no everything set in stone after you're 4 years old or 7 years old. There's no once trauma happens, you're damaged for the rest of your life.
Right.
It's not true. So this ability to be aware, I can program my brain. So all of this stimulation outside of me doesn't have to have the power over me because it's affecting my brain. If I choose to be conscious about thoughts, feelings, actions, what am I going to do with them? Because every time we react in a different way to a familiar stimulus, we create a new neural network. Mm-hmm. And the magnificence of our human brain is that we don't have to get rid of the old unhelpful neural networks, which lead to these patterns, these destructive patterns. All we have to do is build a new one and use the new one. And it's the neurons stay healthy, but the connections dissolve.
Yes, right.
We can change our own brains.
Which is the way to come out of stagnation.
Yes.
So last sentence you said for our life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's a neuroplasticity that can actually transform the brain itself.
Yes, out of those old patterns. And we've all got them. If you're human, you've got them. Our parents were raised by our grandparents, who were raised by our great-grandparents, who were raised all the way back. So many of the thoughts and the way we see the world come from generations ago.
Exactly.
We live in a very different world now. We have very different information about what the building blocks of our world, right?
Right, right, so.
We can reprogram our own brain.
Exactly. All right, well, thank you very much for this extraordinary dialogue and conversation and all of your thoughts. And that was Dr. Elizabeth Berman. She is one of our great teachers in Angel Wing. Thank you.